Dennis Knight. Dennis is the second of two men that we have brought to the congregation to consider for the associate minister role here. Dennis is here with his family, Rebecca, his wife, their three boys, Liam, Lucas, and Elliot, and their little daughter, Monica. Dennis is currently the youth and family minister at the Northland Mission Church of Christ in Kansas City, Kansas. Dennis has been raised in a ministry environment. Many of us have heard his father, Dan, who's spoken here on a few occasions. He was born in a mission setting in Ecuador and moved to California when his parents returned at the age of 9. He was raised in the Los Angeles area when his father was working with the Culver Palms congregation until the age of 18, and then went off and was involved in adventures with missions with the Sunset School of Preaching in Lubbock, Texas. He presently went on to obtain a bachelor's degree in biblical studies from York College, a master's of linguistics from Florida International University, and a master's in ministry from Pepperdine University. Dennis is going to speak to us this morning on the topic of generosity in imitation of God. We've been blessed to have had Dennis and Rebecca and their children in our home this past weekend. It'll probably only take us a month to get over it. But I think you'll find Dennis to be an intriguing speaker who will have a lot to say that will spark not only your interest, but your spirit. Dennis, we look forward to hearing from you.
Congregation, and if you're visiting, I just be prepared. This is a congregation that will welcome you with open arms, and we have hot dogs and hamburgers prepared afterwards to join in with us in a time of fellowship. So if you're visiting, welcome, and get ready to get some good food going on. I have a lot to say this morning. I'm hoping that it will flow the way I want it to flow. I wanted to talk about generosity as the idea of being an imitation of God. There's a saying, it goes, we are never more like God than when we give. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. This idea of imitating God, of our goal being to be like Him, to search His ways, to find what He is and what He is like, and then to imitate that. Generosity is one of those pieces that we're going to look at today. The piece in particular, what I want to start with is kind of the reverse. So there's generosity. What's the reverse of generosity? Am I on here? Yeah. All right. The evil eye. You may have heard of this superstition that when somebody has an eye that's mismatched or has some kind of witchcraft in their background, they can look at you with an eye and curse you or cause some kind of damage to come to you. It's a superstition that's been around a long time. And a huge industry has grown up of charms to protect you from the evil eye. Not only that, but there's symbols that you can give. Speaking of Italy, you go to Italy, you'll see the mano cornuto on occasion because, you know, that's to ward off the evil eye. And it's a superstition that goes back thousands of years. But where did it originally come from? What's the origin of the evil eye? What is it really about? Because I'll tell you this, it's not about curses. It's not about witchcraft. It's not about possession or bad things that can happen to you. It's biblical. It's from the scriptures. And so we're going to look at it, where it originated from scripturally. The first passage is Deuteronomy 28:56. It's kind of a rough passage. I would say it's kind of rated close to PG. So if you might want to cover some ears, I don't know. But it's It's a rough section of scripture. If you want to turn there, Deuteronomy 28, it's a passage of blessings. If God blesses you, He will give you so many good things. If you obey Him, His blessings will just be poured out upon you. But if you disobey, dun, dun, dun. My kids know all about disobedience and what happens. There's punishment. There's consequences. And one of those consequences that God talks about here is a city being besieged. It's a city that is surrounded by the enemy, and no food will enter the city, and the city will go into starvation mode. Everybody fighting and scrapping for every last bit of food they can find. And in this passage, there's the word evil eye. Now, English translations will often translate it differently. They won't use the words evil eye, but it's there in this passage, and it has to do when a pregnant woman who is so sweet and gentle that she barely wants to touch the ground with her sandal for fear of hurting the ground. She's so sweet. She turns the evil eye. In this situation, when everybody's starving, she turns the evil eye to her husband and to the rest of her family. This is the gross part. Because when she gives birth, she's saving that child for herself to eat. She turns the evil eye on her family because she wants to save that food for herself. That's the evil eye. If you look in your translations, it's often translated with the word begrudge. Begrudge. There's a couple other Old Testament passages that refer to the evil eye. But I wanted to move to the New Testament because Jesus also talks about the evil eye. If you go to Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 through 24, it's this great passage. He starts talking about build for yourselves treasures in heaven, not treasures on earth. And he ends with, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve both God and money. And then sandwiched between those two passages, which are clearly about our relationship with money, he's got this little section thrown in there. The eye is a lamp of the body. And if the eye is good, then the body's full of light. But if the eye is, and the word there is evil, if you have an evil eye, then your body will be full of darkness. Ooh, how great that darkness will be. What is this evil eye he's talking about? When you look at it in this context, it becomes pretty clear. It's talking about greed. It's talking about begrudging. It's talking about wanting money so badly that you look at people with greed and envy and desire the wealth that they have. And you don't even, it's not even looking at people, it's desiring money to the point where it consumes you. So that's how the evil eye is used here. It has to do with selfishness. It has to do with the unwillingness to share. Was it that part of the lesson? Okay. Okay. I've seen the evil eye so many times over the last 5 years as I've had children. One child, no evil eye. Two children, the evil eye starts to come out. Three children, there goes that evil eye. And now my little 11-month-old, if my sons get close to her and to the toy that she has in her hand, guess what? Evil eye. They've got it. That unwillingness to share, that is an innate part of being human. We have to get taught to share, right? That's something that we have to learn because it's just not natural, I guess, for us. We have to learn to share. And sometimes it's hard to share. And we want to hold on to what's ours. We want to hold on to what we have. That's the evil eye. I'll come back to it towards the end. I'll come back to it later. Oh boy, I have to catch up. Catch up. Okay. So let's leave the evil eye for a second. Let's talk about God and His generosity. I wanted to just bring out some I guess, some characteristics of God's generosity. The first one being that he gives joyfully. When God gives, he's just so happy to give. It just makes him so happy to give. When he gives, there's no reluctance. There's no hesitation. I don't know if I want to give this. When he gives, he's forcing it on you. Take it. I want you to have it. It's yours. Take it. He is so joyful in his giving. He loves to give. Secondly, God gives his best. He doesn't have the hand-me-downs. He doesn't have the things that are kind of slightly ugly or worn. And that's what he gives us. He gives us his best. The very best of what he has is what he gives. When he made this world, it wasn't the sloppy, you know, model. No. He gave us this perfect world. We may have messed it up a little bit, but he gave us the best. And everything that he gives us in this life is the best that he could possibly give. In fact, if it was less than the best, he wouldn't give it, because it's not enough. He wants to give the very best. Now, this is a rough part, this next part. When he gives his best, he gives his best to everyone. The scripture that Ben read, Luke 6:38. If you go back a few verses to Luke 6:35, it says, God gives to the wicked and the ungrateful. He gives to everyone. That's one of the ones that we maybe have the most trouble with, right? We'll give to our children. We'll give to our friends, to our family. We'll give them the best most of the time. Maybe some hand-me-downs here and there. But we'll give them, we love them. We want to give them the best of what we have. But what about the wicked? The ungrateful? Our enemies? Do we give to them? In fact, that same verse, Luke 6:35 says, lend to your enemies without expecting anything in return. Oh, man, that one gets tough. This is where imitation starts to get a little bit trickier. God gives his best to everyone. To everyone. And finally, God doesn't expect any repayment. He hopes that it'll spark something in us. He hopes that this generosity that he gives, which he gives, sparks something in us. Some kind of response. But it's not required. He doesn't do it in expectation of any kind of repayment, any kind of giving back. He hopes that comes, but he just gives to give. There's no selfishness in his part at all. There's no desire for some kind of recompense, some kind of negotiation taking place where he gives us, then we give him, and he gives us, and then we give him. That's not what it's about. It's just pure giving. It just gives. Okay. Three areas, or manifestations, I call it. Three manifestations of God's generosity. Because one thing I didn't want to talk about money necessarily. When we talk about generosity, we often tag it specifically to money. But money's not the only commodity. Money's not the only thing that we have of value that we should be generous with. And so I wanted to tag a couple of other areas of generosity that I felt God gives freely of, and in our imitation of him, we should also be giving freely. So God gives his time. From the perspective of this creator of the universe, the one who shaped the world and the solar system and the galaxy and galaxies upon galaxies, the one who sits enthroned on high with angels upon angels in joyful assembly, the one who is the majesty of all majesties. When it comes to time, he's got nothing he would rather do than spend it with you, than give it to you. As an individual human being, a little tiny speck of protoplasm on this planet, he gives you all the time you'll take. As much time as you want, God will give it to you. The God who created all has time for you, and he's generous with it. He'll give it all to you. He'll give you all the time you could possibly take. He's generous with his time. Second, he's generous with his trust. I don't know exactly how to phrase this one. I struggled with how to show you the way that God trusts us. And I know you know, but one passage that has always haunted me is this little parable in Luke chapter 18. It's a great parable. Jesus is talking about the power of persistent prayer. And he tells a parable about a widow who just nags and nags and nags this judge, this unjust judge who doesn't care about God, doesn't care about men, but she just keeps coming to him and saying, give me justice, give me justice, give me justice. She doesn't try to bribe him. She doesn't try any of the other routes, but just constantly comes at him day after day, give me justice, give me justice, give me justice. And the judge finally says, I don't care about God. I don't care about men. But this woman keeps nagging me. I gotta give in. She's battering me with her constant pestering. I'm gonna give her justice just to get her off my back. And Jesus says, if that's how the unjust judge is gonna be, how much more will your Father give to you if you pray? Well, that's a great parable. But the very last verse is haunting to me. It says, but when the Son of Man returns, will he find faith on earth? I'm not sure what's going on there with Jesus. Is he just wondering about us? I'm doing a lot here. I'm about to die for you guys. I wonder what happens when I come back. Will I find faith? Is this going to be worth it? Giving an awful lot. I'm trusting you with an awful lot. He does it anyway. He trusts. And that's one of the ultimate expressions of his trust. He gives his life. And with 12 men who are flawed as the rest of us, he entrusts his church. And his trust is at least a bit well-founded. We're still here today. We are inheritors of that trust. He trusted Abraham, some flaws there, but made it through. Trusted David, some flaws there, but made it through. He gives us his trust. And I want you to see this, not as a body of Christ, but as humans, flawed humans, God trusts you to be his ambassadors. God trusts you to carry the word of his Son and his Son's sacrifice to those around you and to future generations. He's trusted you, and he's generous with that trust. Have we let him down? Yes. Individually, yes. As the body of Christ, yes. If we look at the church through the generations and the centuries, oy, we've made some mistakes. But he continues to trust, and he continues to be generous in his trust. He gives us his trust. Okay. And of course, he is so generous with his love. Am I on? Okay. Every time I get here, I can hear myself better, so I'm a little nervous. Sorry. Okay. He gives us his love. There's a Third Day song. Any of you familiar with Third Day, the kind of rock Christian group? Okay, some of you. Yeah. They sing this song, and the chorus goes, just to be with you, I'd do anything. There's no price I would not pay. Just to be with you, I gave everything. I gave my life away. His love is just like an ocean that rolls over us, that is just so overwhelming with how much he loves us, because there's so many times that we mess up and he just loves us. There's so many things that we do that anyone else would turn their backs on us, and he just loves us and gives us his love. Man, you know the Bible calls it adultery when we sin, right? We're in relationship with him, and when we sin, we cheat on him. And he just loves us. Whew, we have trouble with that. We have real trouble with that. Not just between husbands and wives, but with any relationship. When someone betrays us, when someone hurts us, when someone does us dirty, it's hard to love. It's hard to show the forgiveness of that love. It's hard to be generous in love. But God shows us the way. His love is just so full. And he's just so generous with it. And he just gives it without hesitation, joyfully, to those who don't really deserve it very much. So that's God. That's the manifestations of God's generosity. So, an imitation of God. Those same three aspects, I wanted to bring it out, what that would look like then, us imitating God in these three aspects. Time. Generosity with time. If you bring the evil eye back into it, that would be selfishness with time. You've got a chance to spend some time with your wife or go golfing. That's a tough one for me. I love to golf. Generosity with time means giving that time to my wife, giving that time to your husband. Generosity with time means giving that time to children. Oh boy. If my children could, they would demand. I think he's clapping back there. They would love to have me around 24/7. When I go to Starbucks, they know the night before that I'm going to work in the morning, they say, "Don't go to Starbucks, puppy. Don't go to Starbucks." That breaks my heart. You know, tears my heart apart. I have to go, but I love to spend time with them, and it's one of those places where you feel most generous. Maybe is giving time to your children. So let's flip it though. Years later, give time to your parents. Yeah. Give time to your parents. Be generous in the time you share with your parents. Phone calls. We were talking with Dave and Betty, you know, and she said something very wise. She said, Rebecca asked her, "How much time do you talk with your children?" And she said, "Not as much as we would like, but probably more than they would like." And that's the way it goes sometimes, especially when children are in the middle of their young adult, young professional lives. Those of you who are young adults, be generous with your time to your parents. It's a rough one, I know. How about the poor? How about that bum on the street? You might drop a buck in his bucket or something, but how about taking some time to talk? You might get some weird conversations. I've had some weird conversations. But take a little time to talk to someone who is poor. Jesus did. Take some time to talk. Give your time to those who rarely receive the gift of time from anyone. How about the imprisoned? Is there any people in prison? I know there's a juvie around here. How about giving some time? Think about it. I know you got lots to do. I know you're busy people. Give some time to those who need it. Oh, I got a good one here. The jerks. Those people. I know you have people in your life that the minute they walk through the door, you're like, oh, that guy again. In Starbucks, I have one customer in particular, Clark. And every time he walks through the door, it's like my soul withers and dies within me. It's just something about him. And I have to break through a serious attitude problem on my part to give him my time. And in fact, I will tell you, on bad days, I'll just go in the back because I can't handle him. But I know that it's stingy. I know that that's selfish. I know that that's my evil eye. And if I was being like Christ, that's the guy I would give my time to. That's the guy I would give some time to. The seekers, those just wondering about God, oh, we should give them time. Sometimes it's tough. Some of us are better at it than others. But there are people that God has put in your life looking for Him. Give them time. Find time to give them and give it to them. Be generous with your time. How about God? Remember earlier I said He wants to just give you all the time in the world? How much time do we give Him? A couple hours a week? 10 hours a month? That's 120 hours a year? And I think I'm being generous. We don't give Him much time. We don't give Him much time at all. We got to be generous in giving our time to God. All right. Taking a chance on this one. Mike Allstott, would you come up here? So what does it mean to be generous and trust? It's a trust fall. It's a trust fall. But.
You know, I just had an accident, right?
I know. I'm gonna be the one who falls.
Okay.
I don't know Mike that well. For all I know, he might be a great practical joker. But I did pick him because he seems to be fairly steady. So with the little I know of him. But trust. What does it mean to be generous in trust? You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Oh, man. He didn't even make me fall that much. Thanks. Appreciate that. My heart was beating a little bit there. Woo! How much do you trust God? Are you generous with your trust to God? Think about, this is kind of where I see the rich farmer. Remember that guy who just has a great crop and so he builds bigger barns and he's going to eat, drink, and be merry because he's set. He did it all himself. Doesn't have to trust in God. And God says, you fool, this very night your life will be taken from you. And then who will receive all that you worked for? It's kind of a rough one. But one of the things that's there, that's implicit there, is he stopped trusting God. He trusted in his 401k. He trusted in his nest egg. He trusted in his property value. He trusted in the things of this world. And he didn't trust in God. He wasn't generous in trusting God. And just saying, I believe you're going to take care of me. I mean, you say you will. Jesus says, hey, look at the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. He takes care of them. He's going to take care of you. Stop worrying about it. Trust Him. Just trust that He's going to take care of you. Just fall into His arms. So be generous in your trust to God. How about be generous in your trust with those around you? I grew up, at least the 9 to 18, I was in Los Angeles, and I learned not to trust, I'm afraid. It was, you walk down the street. I was playing basketball with some kids one time. I was in ninth grade, and a couple of them were a little bit older than me, and I just kind of jumped on with these guys. I didn't know them at all. And I was playing ball, and my team won. And interestingly enough, the minute that we won, the other three that were on my team just ran off. And I was like, huh. And I put on my backpack and started heading away. And the next thing I know, I was just face down with grass stains on my knees and a little scrape on my face, my backpack gone. They just come up behind me and hit me in the temple and knocked me out and took my backpack. Things like that makes it hard to trust people. You know, Ventura's a little more sedate. Maybe a slightly more safe community than Los Angeles. But still, how far do you trust people? Especially people you don't know. See, that's the thing about imitating God. He wants us to be generous with our trust with everyone. Doesn't mean you don't have to be careful, but it means you have to trust and be generous in trusting, regardless of who that person is, regardless of how much or how little you know him. Think about that one's challenging. Think about that one some. Love. Be rich in giving, and when it comes to love, we hoard our love. We tend to give it to those that are near to us and dear to us, and even then, we tend to hold it back if we're angry with them or have some kind of grievance against them. Whew, the evil eye may not come out. Maybe money is where the evil eye comes out the most, but love is pretty close second. We hoard our love. We hold it tight. And we don't give it away. We don't just give it to anyone, to strangers, to just walk up to people that you don't know and just give them some love. Yeah, it might be a little scary for some people. What does it look like? I was a little nervous about this thing. I'm going to sing. Feel free to join in. You may not know this song, though. It's kind of an oldie. Love is something if you give it away, give it away, give it away. Love is something if you give it away, you'll end up having more. Love is like a lucky penny, hold it tight and you won't get any. Give it away and you'll have so many, you'll end up having more. Or it'll roll all over the floor. Yeah. But that sentiment is so true. So this is what I do every day. As in all my jobs, which I have three at the moment. I have lots of young children that have hungry mouths. But every day, I make that part of my ministry to give love to all the people that I see. And it's a blessing to be able to see so many people every day, to give them some love. I'll tell you what, one of the things with Starbucks is you have to have good customer service. They make that a really high priority. And I believe in customer service, but the reason why I think my store has a great customer service rating is because of love. Not just mine, but I engender it in my partners, my baristas. And I look for that in the people that I hire, people that know how to give love and share themselves. And it changes the lives of the people that come into my store. And they leave feeling better than they came in. And that's so important. And that's something that you can do. That's something that is yours to give, love, that makes people feel better. Okay, boy. Investment language, for those of you who are in business, your return depends on the amount of your investment, if you know that language. What you give determines what you get back. God gives until it hurts. Right? He gives his son that hurt. He gives his trust to the point where it hurts, because he knows we're going to betray him. He gives his love until it hurts. There's no better quote that I have found on that than C.S. Lewis, who says, "I do not believe one can settle how much we ought to give. I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure on comforts, luxuries, amusements, etc., is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, we are probably giving away too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they are too small. There ought to be things we should like to do and cannot do because of our charitable expenditure excludes them." Oh, isn't that powerful? Isn't that so good? Every time I read this, I'm so convicted. You know, do I go on vacation? Or do I find somebody who really needs some money? Who really needs my time? Who really needs what I can give? What do I do with what God has given me? That's what generosity is about. All right, some challenges. Be deliberate in planning your giving. Don't make it this haphazard thing where you just give piecemeal, a little bit here, a little bit there. Give, but be planful in it. Think about what you can give. Organize your time. Organize your trust. Organize your love. Organize your wealth. And give in a planful manner. Second, give more than you can afford to give. Once you've got it all figured out, once you've planned it out, give more. Give more than what you wanted to give, than what you plan to give. Finally, know that it's never in vain. There may not be the gratefulness that you expected from somebody. There may not be the reciprocation that you hoped for when you gave of your time or your love or your trust or your money. But it's not in vain. There's unseen consequences, unseen ways in which what you give reaps benefits. The verse that we read, give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So say you give your time. Say it hurts your job. Say you work less hours at your job because you're giving your time. What's going to happen? Are you going to get fired? You know what? Maybe. If you get fired, guess what? You got a lot more time. Okay, I don't know. That might make you nervous. You might find a better job, though. A job that gives you more time. I'm not saying you'll get fired if you give generously of your time. But what I'm saying is change the way you think about it. Change the way you view time, trust, love. Where it's a commodity that you have that you can just give away. And when you do, things change. Because the second you start really giving it, God starts pouring it on you. Once you give of your time, He'll just pour more time into you. You'll find all of a sudden more time than you had before. I don't know how that works, but you will. If you trust and really give of your trust both to Him and to those around you, it has an effect of filling you with more trust. And the same with love. You give and God gives you more. In fact, He gives you this little bucket full of it, and when he gives it to you, He pushes it down, He shakes it up so that it's full, and then He pours it over into your lap. You have more than you can possibly use. And it's yours to give, and to give more, and to give more. And every time you give, He gives you more. That'd be pretty awesome. Pretty amazing. Final thoughts. The evil eye. Now that you know what it is, try and keep it out of your life. Don't be selfish. Give of your time, of your trust, of your love, of your money to those who need it, to those around you. Have a generous spirit. Fill yourself with the Spirit of God, and it will allow you to be generous. It will give you the generosity you need. And this idea of running over, I had one illustration or one thing that happened that has really inspired me recently. There's a guy, Billy Ray Harris. I've seen him before in downtown Kansas City. A bum. Just sitting on the street, collecting change. Right there on one of the main kind of shopping areas. A lady put some change in his bucket and walked away. And when Billy looked in that bucket, he saw a really nice engagement ring. I mean, a big stone. What do you do when you're a bum, living on the street, and something like that drops in your lap? He took it to a jeweler who offered him $4,000 for it. You know, it was worth way more than that. What do you, $4,000 to a homeless person? That's a fortune. Billy kept it. He held on to it. And a couple days later, this lady came and said, I think I may have given you something of importance. And Billy held up the ring and said, was this it? She gave him all that she had in her purse at the time, all the money she had, which wasn't much. But then she and her fiancé went online and created a Billy Ray Harris fund. And they just, you know, wanted their friends to chip in a little bit, just in their gratitude of what Billy had done. As of now, there's $190,000 in that fund. And more importantly to Billy Ray Harris, it brought him into the newspapers. It went viral, and it put him into the newspapers. And his sisters and brother, who had been looking for Billy Ray Harris for a long time in Texas, saw him and were reunited. And Billy said, this is the best part of it, is being reunited with my family again. I don't know how you would categorize that, except that for me, that was a generosity of spirit. He said he was raised by his grandpa, who was a reverend, and that's what prompted him not to sell the ring. He knew it was important to somebody. And it was a generosity of spirit that made him keep it and give it back to that lady. And God blessed him for it. We give because God gives. And we receive something back. If the evil eye has been a little too prevalent in your life, or if you just feel the need for God to help you in your generosity, we have elders here who would love to pray over you. If you have something in your life that you need to talk to the church about, now's the time. I pray that God will give you plenty of opportunity to be generous, and that you will take advantage of it. God bless you for your time. Thank you.